Thank you very much, and welcome to Vancouver, Jack. It's a rare privilege we have to speak to a leader of a party here prior to an election. In any case, my name is Ivan Bielik. I work for an environmental organization called SPEC, but I have to make it clear that I'm not here speaking on behalf of the organization. And I'll explain in a few moments why. Nevertheless, as an urban environmental organization, clearly, and Jack, you're, I'm sure, more than aware of this, of the need for, or the need that the federal government has to address issues of an urban nature. Given that most of the population of this country lives in urban centers, we have some pressing issues, and I'll speak about some of the environmental issues that we would like to see addressed in an upcoming budget. Firstly, the issue of urban transit. Clearly, according to the Canadian Urban Transit Association report that was recently presented to the federal government, they claim that $21 billion will be needed over the next 5 years simply to maintain the transit systems across this country at their current rate. In Vancouver, the need is obvious. All of us, I'm sure, are aware of the congestion and the pressing need we have with improving our transit system. Primarily what we're talking about, the buses that serve almost 80% of the people here in the inner core of the city. The federal government, as a first step, should share some of the gas tax revenue that it currently takes from the region and put it back into transit. It should also anticipate and speak with urban decision makers in order to come up with some creative measures of improving transit, and it should look at some of the long-term measures that are needed. In other words, let's not just fix, put a Band-Aid on the system now, but let's look at some long-term planning, and let's look at some stable funding which allows for long-term planning. As an aside, I'll perhaps just mention a personal opinion, and that this may or may not be shared, but to plan for an event, a major sporting entertainment event that's coming up in 2010, and to predicate our transit system upon that event may not, some would suggest, be the best form of planning. Another issue that we're very much involved in and that has made some headlines in British Columbia and certainly will in the upcoming weeks or months is the issue of offshore energy. In other words, do we lift the moratorium on offshore energy? Do we, in this province, shackle ourselves to a future of fossil fuel exploration? Now, the federal government has a very major role here and a financial role. Currently, the petroleum industry, the gas and oil industry in Canada, receives tax credits and benefits that some estimate calculate up to around $1.8 billion annually. In other words, a fossil fuel exploration company gets money for drilling empty holes. It is, and for doing our research and development to develop fossil fuel. It's to their advantage to do so. If that same company, and we're talking energy companies, engage in research and development on alternative forms of energy, solar, wind, tidal, geothermal, whatever you want to call it, they get nothing. They get no tax breaks. In fact, they have to pay off the top. I've spoken with members of the energy and petroleum producers in Canada, and I mean, they're very frank about it. They say, we're in the energy industry. We'll produce whatever energy is required, and if they give us the same tax regime and benefit to actually do some groundbreaking R&D, they'll do so. It's not in their interest to do that right now. There simply doesn't make economic sense for them to do so. So meanwhile, we Canadians, I think, you know, or British Columbians if you want to say it, 4 million British Columbians, we have very clever people here, we have lots of trained engineers, we have lots of research potential, but we are now buying wind power for a number of project experimental plants on our North Coast from Denmark, a country of 4 million that exports annually between 500 and 700 million worth of wind energy technology. I could ask the question, how much wind energy technology does Canada produce and export? Well, the answer is zero. Mm-hmm. So are 4 million Danes that much smarter than 4 million British Columbians? I don't think so. But do 4 million Danes have a smarter, a better tax system, incentives, and in their case, not a federal, but national government that promotes creative thinking? Yes. So there's something that certainly our government could do. Another issue, again, that our federal government prides itself upon is its commitment to the Kyoto Protocol, to climate change. And what we're now seeing, in this province at least, is that the lead on climate change is not being taken by Victoria. In fact, it's being taken right here in Vancouver. We have, and to their credit, a municipal council that has actually put a lot of effort and energy into doing something about climate change in the city by creating a climate change task force that has been working for almost a year now to prepare a community action plan that will actually address climate change. It will come up with some measures that we can all undertake, but that's going to cost some money. It'll take dollars to do it. The city can't do it on its own. The NGOs who are partnering with the city on this, because the city has actually taken some very progressive steps in opening up the process and moving beyond the old system of talking within the walls and talking to the whole community on this. But the NGOs can't do it on their own. We need to see some of those big Kyoto dollars that are going, in some cases, to, and I don't want to disparage the campaign, but I've seen lots of glossy posters that I know cost hundreds of thousands to produce, but I think that some of that money and some of that energy needs to go to the cities, to the city of Vancouver, that has some very concrete plans on the books and that we'll all be seeing this spring. On another issue, again, I'll just come back to that big sporting event in 2010 that we're inviting the world to attend here, which is great. One of the key points of the Olympics is economic and sustainability, economic viability and environmental sustainability. What's interesting is that we're planning an Olympic village in Southeast Falls Creek, yet a few meters literally from where those Olympians will be sleeping, we have a combined sewer outfall that during periods of heavy rainfall, and we all know in Vancouver those are fairly frequent, pumps raw sewage directly into Falls Creek. Right now in Vancouver, in the region, we are pumping about 700 million liters of nearly raw sewage, industrial effluent, into the Fraser River Broad Inlet and into Falls Creek every day. We have a liquid waste management plan that anticipates replacing all of those CSOs, those combined sewer outfalls, by 2075. We have a liquid management plan that will consider, it will not commit to, but it will consider the upgrading of our sewage treatment plants somewhere between 2025 and 2030. Well, I think if we're going to invite the world to Vancouver to experience an environmentally sustainable event, I don't think the way we handle our liquid waste is good enough. It's not a sexy issue, you know. I mean, essentially we're talking about sewage. I won't get into what that means. We all know. It means the stuff that's going out into our receiving waters. It's the reason why we have dead orcas who are among the endangered southern population that wind up on our beaches, and their carcasses have to be treated as hazardous material because they're so contaminated with PCBs, dioxins, pesticides, and other industrial effluents. I don't think it takes a David Suzuki or a marine biologist here to put the link between the more crap we flush down the toilets and pour down our drains that is untreated, the worse we're treating our waters. So this is an infrastructure area, again, that the federal government should be looking at improving in the cities on the West Coast. Vancouver and Victoria are probably the worst players in the province and in the country, really, when it comes to the dumping of raw sewage into receiving waters. And it's an area that they need help with. So federal dollars, if they're going to be spent anywhere on an Olympic project to improve, that's where they should go. Lastly, the reason that I can't say that I work for SPEC and that SPEC has issues is because the federal tax structure muzzles me as a member of an NGO from speaking to you, a politician, on these issues. No less an authority than the Vancouver Sun, don't like to quote them very often, but they refer to our existing laws as murky, unreasonable, archaic, and paternalistic. Essentially, what that means is that as a member of a volunteer environmental group, if I seek to have pollution laws enforced, we will be stripped of our charitable status and our ability to raise funds and exist, while a polluter can hire a PR firm, experts, etc., and write it off as a business expense and speak to you and lobby to you in Ottawa. But if I do it, I'm going to lose my status. Now, many groups, including David Suzuki Foundation, Sierra Legal, etc., of Canada's 80,000 charitable NGOs have been audited. And the reason you get audited is because you squawk. Mm-hmm. And what happens is we have a regime now where NGOs are allowed 10% of their resources. That's not 10% of their budget. That's 10% of every press release, of every meeting, every phone call, every volunteer effort can go towards what is termed political action. Political action means public discourse, exactly as we're having right now. If you go beyond that 10% level, then a bean counter from the Ministry of Finance in Ottawa will come and determine whether your press release and your discussion is appropriate civil behavior. So an accountant is going to tell us what kind of discussions one should have with our decision makers. Now, most countries in the world, I should just preface, these rules are based on the Elizabethan Poor Law. And I'm not talking Elizabeth II, but Elizabeth I of 1604. And they've been changed periodically. They were changed in the 1800s to reflect reality. But the bean counters would probably still be wearing horsehair wigs if they could. And the laws have not been changed except last year the federal Senate or the Senate did a review, and in their wisdom they thought, oh yeah, these people have a good point. Britain's changed their laws, the United States has, Australia, New Zealand, everyone is, most European countries have just eliminated it totally, said NGOs behave like anyone else. But the senators in their wisdom said, yes, we'll change the 10%, we'll give you 12%. Thank you very much.
Chair to the Senate.
So, if anything, there are a number of very concrete measures that you could, that a federal cabinet could do tomorrow to make life easier for NGOs and also to make the urban environment a cleaner, better, and safer place for all of us. Thank you.